For the final time in 2020, welcome to another edition of The War Room here on KLKC. I'm your host, Sean Fry. Today's guest I'm super excited about. Last minute guest, I had to go get her after I had a COVID cancellation. And so today's guest is going to be Pittsburgh State women's basketball star and Labette County High School alum, Tristan Gegg. Loved covering Tristan. I covered her entire high school career. My very first year at the Parsons Sun was her freshman year at Labette County High School, and so I saw all 4 years of it. She was the first. She was part of the first class that I saw go all the way through at the Sun, and she was a fun player to watch. One of the stories that I remember, one of the stories I hold most dear about my time here in Parsons and with the Parsons Sun, is I went to one year my family, my dad came and visited me from Hawaii. He came into Parsons, Kansas, and it was on a Friday night during basketball season. And so I took him to the game I was going to go cover, and I was watching the and I went to go watch Labette County play that night. And during the warmups, I was watching Tristan Gegg play and warm up, and the Labette County Grizzlies warm up. And I told my dad, "You see that girl right there?" And I pointed towards Tristan. "She's one of the best players, if not the best player in the state." And my dad kind of looked at me and was like, "Oh, okay," and just thinks I'm being a little local bias and everything. And Tristan scored over 40 that game. So, and I just remember at one point Tristan pulled up from, pulled a deep three, like off a catch, coming off a flare screen, caught it on the catch right at the top of the key, probably 3 or 4 feet behind the line, rose up and drilled a three. And my dad threw his hands up in the air and he goes, "How did she make that?" Well, this was Tristan's senior year. So basically everybody else in the gym was numbed to that by then. And so it was nice to see, you know, just that same kind of early reaction to just how talented some players are, and really getting that appreciation for it. You know, and so we're going to talk to Tristan Gegg now. She's having a great career at Pittsburgh State. We'll talk about how COVID's impacted her life. She's a fellow COVID-19 survivor. Both her and I had it. And so we'll talk about that as well. Obviously, this is going to be the last show right before New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, and this show right after Christmas. Hope everybody had a good Christmas and stayed safe. It's just a weird time right now, isn't it? Like, you know, I thought, you know, I wondered what I was going to talk about for my last show in this little intro segment before I got into my conversation with Tristan. And I wondered what I wanted to say. And to me, I've almost kind of run out of things to say. Everybody knows the drill by now. We all need to be safe. We all need to operate responsibly. But one thing I want to talk about before we go to a break here is 2020 in your life, it is what you make it. And there's going to be a lot of people this year where 2020 was the best year of their lives. They had a lot of great things. There are people who got married. There are people who had kids. There are people who fell in love. There are people who finally got their dream job in 2020. And COVID and all that adversity is not going to take away from their happiness. And they deserve that happiness because they earned it. Life is what you make it. And so let's go to a quick break and talk to somebody who I think has really made the most out of everything life has had to offer. And that's Tristan Gegg. We'll be right back here on The War Room. And we're back here on The War Room here on KLKC. I'm your host, Sean Fry. And I'm joined by, honestly, one of my favorite people that I've ever covered here in Labette County High School. She's now a star women's basketball player at Pittsburgh State, Tristan Gegg. Tristan, how are you doing? We're recording this the day after Christmas, so Merry Christmas. How are you doing?
Merry Christmas to you, too. Yeah, I'm doing great. I got your text yesterday, and I was like, sure, why not? I got nothing else to do, so I'll come on in.
I had a cancellation of a guest, and I've had that a lot, by the way, with between COVID and, you know, it was just how unpredictable the world is now. I've actually had probably 5 or 6 people say, "Hey, can we just do it next weekend or something like that?" Within the last like 3 months, so I'm always scrambling for guests. I think one, and then for 2 weeks I had COVID, and so I had to do it over the phone or do it myself. It's a weird year. Did you watch any basketball yesterday? You watch any of the NBA?
No, I didn't watch any basketball. Our families don't really ever turn on the TV whenever we have Christmas, so we started out pretty early, like 8:30. Cooked breakfast, and then opened presents, and then went to my grandma's.
So. I'll tell you what I love as an adult is...
Sleeping in.
Hey,
we're all adults, but we just like to eat big breakfast.
We'll just dive right in. At Pitt State, you're not losing a year of eligibility this year, right?
Nope, I'm not. I get everyone in the MIAA or NCAA gets a whole other year of eligibility.
I'm curious as to how that affects you, because every student athlete is going to be a little affected a little more differently. If you're a senior, you may say, okay, you know, maybe I can go get an extra year and go get a master's somewhere. If you're a freshman, you may say, hey, I may be able to finish my degree in 3 years, depending on where I was in high school, and maybe I can go be a grad transfer or have like another 3 years of eligibility somewhere, depending on where I'm at. I'm curious as to, you look at your academic situation, you look at your athletic situation, what do you envision yourself, how do you envision yourself taking advantage of that extra year, of the year you're not being charged?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this actually, but I do plan on getting my master's degree in education, but I don't plan on teaching right out of college. I really want to be a grad assistant, but my fifth year, I plan on playing as long as my body allows me to. And my coach wants me to play my fifth year, so we've talked a lot about it, but she's also said that I might be able to GA as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be a really cool thing to do.
Interesting that... Big shock that the coach wants her deadly 3-point shooter to play. Wow, who would have saw that coming?
Yeah.
You know what about your teammates? Like, what's kind of the general consensus of how people may operate? Like I say, I'm sure you've got seniors and you've got freshmen on that team. What's been the spectrum of range there?
So we already have a fifth year senior right now, and she's completing her master's, and I don't think she's going to stay another year just because her body's pretty worn down, and she just kind of wants to get on with life. But our point guard, she is actually getting married in a year and a half, I'm pretty sure. So I haven't asked her if she's going to play her fifth year, but I imagine since she's going to get married, she's going to want to go ahead and start her life. So Sydney, I don't know what she's going to do either. I don't think she'll play her fifth year, but if she wants to, I think that would be awesome. And then Ashton, she's my age also, but she redshirted a medical red shirt because she had a really bad concussion last year, freshman year.
Yeah.
So she was out for like 6 months with a concussion. It was really bad. So she's already a year behind us technically in playing levels. So she'll probably stay that year. I'm trying to think of who else. Erin, I don't know what she's going to do. I haven't talked to her, but she doesn't live around here. So she'll probably graduate and go on with her life. So we'll see what happens. But other than me and Ashton, we might be the only two that'll end up staying. And then we have really good younger people coming in next year, too. So it should be pretty fun.
What's been the take me through some of the day-to-day COVID life of being an athlete at Pitt State. What type of protocol you guys are undergoing? What's the, you know, how you guys are trying to follow all the guidelines and everything? Because I know you guys it can be pretty rigorous for you guys up there.
Yeah, especially at Pitt because their cases were so high.
Pittsburgh was the epicenter of COVID of Kansas at one point.
Yes, it was pretty bad. Luckily, I didn't get it at that point.
Dang college kids.
Literally. But people couldn't stop going out, and it was just causing a big ruckus. But, no, we have to wear masks everywhere. When you get in the gym, we have to go get our temperatures taken before we go to the locker room, before we go to the gym, before the weight room. And then we have to wear masks until get in the locker room and until we get into the gym. So, and during the games and stuff, we have to bring masks to the sidelines and set them on our bench. And when we're out, you put them on. Or if you're sitting out for a second, you're about to go back in. I don't usually put one back on, but definitely the people who haven't gotten in are supposed to wear one on the bench, and the coaches wear one. So it's
one of my favorite things I read in the high school guidelines for Keisha was the official is supposed, like, if the official hears a coach talking to them and they look at the coach and the coach isn't wearing a mask, they're not supposed to address the coach. Like,
oh,
the coach,
really? The I didn't know that.
The ref is supposed to ignore you if the coach is not wearing his mask when he's yelling at you.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that. I haven't heard about that for college.
Oh, my gosh. What's the, how many, is Pittsburgh doing, is Pitt State doing a lot of testing on its student athletes? Are you guys?
Yes. Okay. Once a week. So every Sunday night at like 5 or 6 is when we have to come in and get tested. But as I told you before, I had already had it. So the people who have had it on the team don't have to go get tested for 90 more days.
And so, yeah, we talked about that off air. That was going to be my next question for you. I didn't notice because I don't think you were very public about it. You actually had COVID-19 and this was, so if it was right before your season, it would have been late November, early December, maybe?
Yeah, it was late November. I don't even remember exactly what date it was, but we got tested on Sunday, and then we had a game that Thursday, and I got a call on Tuesday saying I was positive, and I was like, I feel just fine. So I wouldn't have known I had it unless I got tested. But so then I just quarantined at my house in Pittsburgh and never – I didn't have to do protocol coming back because I didn't have any symptoms, so I could just jump right in and start practicing.
How many people do you live with in Pitt?
Two, but they had already had it, so they didn't, they didn't have to quarantine either. So it was kinda, it was kind of nice.
The immunity house.
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you have any idea where you got it?
Honestly, no. I went to Branson that weekend with my boyfriend, so maybe I got it from there, but I had a mask on the whole time at Silver Dollar City, but you can obviously get it anywhere. So.
You can. It will, a quote I got from the Oswego High School football coach was, there are teams and there are people, there are schools that do everything right, and that virus is going
to
get in.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And there's really no way of stopping it. There's protocols to help you protect you and yourself from other people, but there's just no certain way you're not going to get it.
You know, in a bit of transparency, it's like I do nothing but preach, follow the health guidelines, wear the mask, and do all that. I'm anal about it. I still go to before I got COVID. I still went to Kitchen Pass. I wore the mask when I went in there, and I did what I was supposed to do. But I mean,
is that where you got it from?
No, So I can't remember if I've talked about this on air or not, but. Basically, there was an outbreak at the Parsons Sun.
Oh, gotcha.
And so we have about, let me count them up real quick. We have about 10 to a dozen full-time daytime employees. 8 of them got it.
Oh, my goodness.
So they ended up shutting the office down to the public for like a month. A little over a month. And I think the theory behind that was, we don't want the public coming in and kept getting it.
Yeah.
And we don't want, also don't want the public bringing it into us again. Right. So that was brutal because, I mean, and then we had, so of our newsroom, a newsroom editor, people who write stories for the newspaper, that's 4 people. It's me, Colleen Williamson, Jamie Willey, and Ray Nolting.
Okay.
3 of us got it.
Oh, wow.
And so one guy was left putting together the paper while we were all out simultaneously. Oh, goodness. Yeah, we all got it within a week of each other. Wow. And 2 of us got it simultaneously. So I remember I was the first one back, and that office was quiet.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Oh, it was so weird.
It probably got super loud when you got back, though.
You know, you insulted me on my show last time.
You insulted
here.
Me off air. So
I insult you off air all the time. That is what I live to do. That is one comment that one person made was, there goes our peace and quiet that we had for 2 weeks.
That's funny.
So it was asymptomatic for you, huh?
Yeah, I literally had no idea. And even after I got back, I still had my taste. Because usually your taste and smell is what's, even if you don't have any other symptoms.
I never lost my taste when I had it.
Yeah, but did you lose your smell?
No.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. It's weird, though, because I didn't have literally anything wrong with me. No fever, nothing, no fatigue. When I came back, my chest hurt because I have asthma. Mm-hmm. So it was just hard to breathe. But
yeah. And I'm sure that's all a combination of between COVID and, if you're an athlete and then you go into quarantine for 10 days and then trying to get back into
I tried to run while I was positive, and I had obviously a mask on the whole time I was outside, but I still, it's not in basketball shape. So it was hard, and I had to play 2 days later when I came back. So it was pretty tough. But
what was your, how did you feel in that game when you came back? You said you only scored 7 points or something like that.
Yeah, I felt horrible.
I always maintain, I'm a guy that is never going to criticize somebody for not scoring a ton. Mainly because I think you know this, the game of basketball can be affected in a lot of different ways.
You
can control the game as a player and score 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true.
So I'm not going to criticize you for only scoring 7 points, but you feel like that wasn't a great performance. Why do you, when you came back in that first game, what was going through your head, and what did you experience physically coming off of COVID?
Well, for me, not scoring is a huge deal because that's what I'm there to do. Like, that's what I was recruited to do.
That's fair. Yes,
so
you are a scorer.
That's why I feel like I wasn't able to produce as much, but mm-hmm. also just the fatigue of me being tired. I felt like I let my coach down and my team down because she ended up starting me, even though I was out for a while. And I was like, I'm glad I am because, mm-hmm. like, I want to. But then again, I was out for that long.
It's very common protocol for someone coming off, like, any type of leave, whether it's, like, a sick leave off the team or – I remember when I was at K-State, we had a player, Jamar Samuels, his grandma died during the year, and she died, the day of a game. And so he played the game that day. And from what I remember, the death wasn't sudden. It was somewhat expected.
Okay.
But she died that day of a game. But then we had to travel for a tournament. And that tournament started like 3 days later. So after the game, he drove immediately to Kansas City, flew home to Washington, D.C., went to the funeral, and then came back a couple days after that. And I think he had only missed like 2 practices, but he didn't start that first game of the tournament back.
Right.
And he was a starter because because he missed a couple practices. And that's a pretty common practice of a coach. Did your coach give you a reason as to why you were going to start after?
I mean, I practiced decently, like pretty mm-hmm. good the 2 days I was able to practice before we played. And our team had it's tough because it's the very first game, so it's hard to want to mess up that rhythm that our whole team has been in leading up to those games with like the starting five or whatnot. But no, I don't know, she never told me. I mean, I just guess it's because I am a scorer and we needed scorers out there, but I didn't do that either. So
you know that girl that can hit from the spike line? Yeah she's starting, thank you.
But
when you let's shift a little bit because, you know, we got about 7 minutes left before we're going to go to a quick break and what we call the on-air portion of the show. So what the radio audience will hear. You're in your third year of being a college athlete. You look back at since the time you committed to Pitt State and you look at everything that you've experienced since then. If I remember correctly, you committed before your senior year of high school.
It was, yeah, I'm pretty
sure. Or before those, your season of your senior year.
Yes, it was like, I signed in November.
Yeah.
Or October or something like that.
You had a senior year of high school. And I think we saw what can happen to a lot of seniors in high school with COVID. And then they lost some spring seasons. And we had, you know, 8 teams per class, boy and girl, lose out on their state tournaments at basketball. We saw all the spring seasons canceled, and I'm sure you experienced that with your own fellow athletes at Pitt State. Mm-hmm. Everything you've experienced over 3 years, the whole process, committing when you did, the school you chose, the process you've been through since, all the adversity that COVID has thrown onto that. What have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about being an athlete that you want to tell kids in this community? Because there are kids in this community that still want to go. Be an athlete at a JUCO or at a Pitt State.
I mean, honestly, I don't think that this that COVID should stop that. Personally, like mm-hmm. if you have your heart set on going to play somewhere, I don't think you should just give up because your season was canceled or anything like that. I think you should still reach out to coaches and be able to send them film if they haven't already been able to watch you. It's some kids take advantage of not take advantage, but I don't think they put themselves out there as much as they should. Like I was mm-hmm. lucky because Pitt is so close, and they have been recruiting me since I was in, like, junior high or whatever.
Yeah.
But kids who want to go play somewhere that may be far away or something and the coach has never heard of them, they need to send film. They need to contact the coach themselves. They need to email them. Like, they need to put themselves out there to be able to go play where they want to.
I would love to know how Erica Gartner got noticed by Bemidji State.
They saw her at an AAU tournament.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where they saw her play, and she met them there.
That's where a lot of recruiting is these days, and that's the dirty truth. I think there's a there's kind of a criticism of that AAU, and they're right. AAU is not the purest form of basketball. You're gonna watch better, more well-executed basketball in high school than you are at AAU. But AAU is a great recruiting opportunity. You got to think of it from the logistics of a college coach. If you spend, are you going to spend 2 hours at one game where you can see two teams, or you can spend 2 hours and go watch
multiple
players
people
from all around the country?
Yeah.
And so there is a balance there. And
it does suck.
Did you played a little AAU, didn't you?
I played from 7th grade to junior year of high school. But it is very expensive. Depends where you go. But, like, local AAU teams aren't that expensive. But I played out of Kansas City, and we spent a lot of money. And I got a lot of great experience, met a lot of new people. I got to travel everywhere, so that was so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
But
you played for Wheat State Elite, right?
No, Eclipse.
Okay, that's right. You did play for Eclipse.
And I got noticed by a ton of people, and I'm still here at Pitt. So, like, it's kind of funny how that turned out, but it definitely made me a much better player playing against people from all over the world.
Are there fans at Pitt State games right now?
Yes, 25% capacity is what the NCAA can have.
I'm genuinely not trying to make fun of the facility at Pitt State, but with that size of a gym, that's basically your players' families at this point.
Our gym's bigger gyms, like, in the MIAA, actually. Like, it's pretty big, so we fill quite a bit of what we can in
there. What
the
is capacity in there, ballpark?
Well, I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. Maybe 3,000 to 4,000 or something like that. So
you get about 1,000 in there at most, probably.
Yeah. So it's not terrible. I'm just blessed that we get to have some fans, honestly.
Yeah. That's a hit or miss issue for me. Obviously it was a big controversy at the high school level here in Kansas to allow fans in. And now that I think a lot of the arguments have been made and the decisions have been made, so I'm not going to rehash the pros or cons of it. I'm just going to say, man, that I love, like, the three games that I got to go to with no fans. It was so peaceful, and it was just...
Being as a player, though, it kind of feels you. So it's a lot better.
There's an assistant coach at Oklahoma State men's basketball. His name's Eric Pastrana. He was a graduate assistant at K-State when I was manager there, and then he was actually a coach at Labette for a little bit before he moved on, and we were kind of talking about all that, and he goes, I'd rather go play in Allen Fieldhouse at K-State. You know, I'd rather be a K-State guy playing in Allen Fieldhouse than playing in an empty gym.
Yeah.
I'd rather have the most hostile crowd against me than no crowd at all.
Right.
And there, I think there's a lot of truth to that for the people who truly are the biggest competitors out there.
It's very true. Even, like, the competitor or the people against you kind of fuel you in a way. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's really fun.
I loved when I went on the road. You know, even as a manager, I loved, you know, going back and forth with a bit of the crowd that I was facing on the road and stuff like that. I remember I basically got into a big argument with an Oklahoma State fan once.
Oh, goodness. Have you been to Fort Hayes gym, the big arena, the Coliseum that they
have? I have, yes. Not for a college game, though. I was there for a high school state tournament. St. Paul was playing in the state championship.
So we played there last year for when we went to made nationals. Mm-hmm. And we had lost by 2 points or something like that.
It's a nice gym.
It's huge. So I think I had about 22 points or something like that by the end of it. But the crowd was booing us. Like, and we were just fueling from it. Like, we were on fire. And it's just kind of cool to play somewhere like that, honestly.
Tristan, we're gonna go to a quick break for radio listeners on KOKC. That'll do it. If you want to hear more of what Tristan Gegg has to say, and I don't know why anybody would want to at this point. you can go online to the KOKC website, or you can go to Apple Podcasts and download this show. Tristan, anything you want to say to the radio audience before we head out?
Thanks for listening to me, not Sean, but to me.
I think a lot of people will be feel the same sentiment. We'll go to a quick break. More Tristan Gegg when we come back right after this. And we're back with Tristan Gegg. If you've made it this far, congratulations. Not many people can tolerate Tristan this long.
Obviously, you can, or you wouldn't have asked me to come in and talk.
Tristan, I can talk to you all day, and I mean that, too. You're one of my... you're so... I remember when I got the job in 2014 at the Parsons Sun, the first game I covered, the first high school game I covered, was a volleyball match at Labette County High School. And you were a freshman, and you were playing varsity because you're special. And because you got preferential treatment over
Honestly,
everybody else.
Do you want to know how that happened?
How did what happen?
Me playing varsity volleyball. Like, I never thought I was going to. But I was friends with some of the seniors, like Topaz Rakestraw. Like, all of, do you know who that is?
I vaguely remember the name Topaz. There's a, I can't remember. Whoever's married to Wes Kroll is the person I remember.
Okay. But I was good friends with her. And then, so we had two courts divided. Mm-hmm. And my friends were all down on one court, and I was with them. And Topaz was like, Tristan, come here. Come play with us. So I just walked over and did this drill with them, and then I guess Snyder liked what she saw and just kept me over there. So that's,
really?
That's how that happened. Yeah. But, I mean, it wasn't like a chosen, Tristan, you're going to come over here.
My guess is, if I had to guess, Snyder probably told that player to tell you to come over there.
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
That would be my guess as to what happened. I have no idea either. But anyway, so I'm at that game, and Ed Ration was there, and... So I'm still really getting to know the community. I'm really green on who everybody is. And so I'm talking to Ed, and he's taking me through who all the players are and who the coach is, and I'm getting a scouting report, and he goes, you see that girl right there? Her name's Tristan Gegg. And I thought it was Greg for about the first 3 weeks of my life.
Everyone does.
Everybody does. It auto-corrects on my phone, too. Yeah. Like, it's brutal. I don't see how you live your life like that. Ed Ration goes, that's Tristan Gegg, and she's going to be the best player in this school's history.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, man, that's a big sell.
I knew you wouldn't believe
that
it.
It's not that I didn't believe it. It's that, A, I had never seen you play. I didn't know who you were. You could have been anybody at that point. But B, that's a big ask. That's a big ask of anybody. And I would argue there's certainly nobody better, no woman, and I would argue no man, better than you that ever went through that school in terms of what you accomplished. You always carried yourself well at Labette County High School, and you went to state all 4 years. Did all 4 years.
Yeah.
Only won a league title 3 years.
Hmm. We did. We tied with Chanute my junior year.
No, you...
Or what it...
You tied with... Were you on that team that tied with Chanute? No, because that
was the freshman.
Okay.
And then did
they tied with Chanute again? Nina Taylor, senior year. You were already gone by then.
Yeah.
And that was because no offense to Snyder and your old alma, that's because Nina Taylor at Parsons went and beat Labette County.
Yeah.
One day.
Yeah.
And that allowed Chanute to come in with a tie.
Right.
I remember Dustin Fox, the coach at Chanute.
He's such a great man.
I love Dustin Fox.
He always
great
was
coach.
Very, very sweet to me.
Have you ever seen his scorebook?
I have not.
He has the neatest handwriting.
Oh my gosh. He writes letters. I follow him on Twitter, and he puts stuff on Twitter, and I'm like,
that's handwritten by him. That's not like some app that he found, like some Instagram post.
Yeah.
That is him handwriting that
it's
stuff.
It's so pretty. I know.
It's unbelievable. Like, when he does a scorebook, I'm like, wow, I can just read this instantaneously. There are some coaches you can't even read it.
I know.
Like, my handwriting's that bad. You can't read my crap, but... We're not on the on-air portion anymore. Yeah, you can't read my shit like that.
Oh, my
gosh.
This
is funny. It's time to let it go. but when I was, what were we even talking about? About
Ed Ration.
Ed Ration. Oh, yeah. So Dustin Fox, they played a game that night that Parsons beat Labette County.
Mm-hmm.
And when they saw that Parsons beat Labette County, obviously they knew they shared the league title, and they got a league title that year. And in the story in the Chanute Tribune, he was quoted in saying, we were following the Parsons Sun Twitter account for updates on the game.
Oh, my gosh.
All huddled in the locker room just constantly refreshing the phone, and then the final score tweet came out, and I was like, wow,
that's funny.
That was a funny one. But you won the league 3 of the 4 years ago. I think the only year you didn't was your junior year, and I think Pittsburgh
took it that year. Yes, they did.
Who did they have that year?
Taylor Muff, Ashley Bysinger, Logan Lord.
That team was stacked. That was a good team.
We lost to him one time and beat him the second time. So we split with them that year, I'm pretty sure. Or did we lose both? Did we really?
Yeah. Because remember, you lost at home. I remember that was a big controversy. Because you had said something in the paper of, we're going to go beat Pittsburgh.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah.
And then so the whole Pittsburgh student section or something like that,
And it's funny, they're
that.
My biggest fans when I'm at Pitt State now, so how that works.
Screw them, right?
Yeah. Some Parsons or some Pittsburgh kids I see at school, they're like, hey, how are you doing? I'm like, don't be fake. Like, you were so mean to me when I was in high school. I don't want to hear it.
Don't be fake. They were terrible. I'll say this. I think the Pittsburgh student section certainly is the most hostile in the league.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
I don't even think it's close.
No,
it's honestly, not. Second is probably Labette County, and it's not that close.
Yeah, I would say that.
I don't know what a third would be.
Independence was pretty brutal.
Independence can get there, yeah. Parsons can get there. They're not necessarily hostile. I think they're more, they can just get, that whole gym can just get loud.
Yeah, it gets for sure.
I think Parsons has the loudest gym.
Oh, I don't know. I think ours
it's right up there with
Labette
County.
Because our wood ceilings, I think they echo pretty bad or pretty good. So.
Both facilities are really engineered for architecturally designed for sound.
Yeah,
it's
I would
a
good. That.
Both are good atmospheres. I'll tell you what, Labette County athletics this year. It's good to see. It was so fun to watch Heather Wilson and that volleyball program do what they did.
It is.
That
yeah.
was. I'll tell you what, I've seen a lot of, kind of short but sustained periods of where you're playing at your absolute best. They were playing their absolute best for 3 weeks.
Oh, I know.
And didn't lose.
Yeah.
And they basically had to win all those matches.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, she's awesome. I don't know how she does everything she does.
Between, I seriously wonder, I'll never forget just a small interaction I had with her was, I don't even think it was during, I can't remember exactly when it was, but I was walking out of the gym at Labette County and Heather was, and I got to my car and then I saw Heather walking out. And so I'm like, you doing all right, Heather? And I go, I think I made the comment of, you probably spend more time here than you do at your own house. And I was just making a joke and she goes, oh, it's not even close.
No, she does.
She was completely serious. She's like, not even close.
She lives 45 minutes away, and she does theater, basketball, volleyball, goes to all her kids' games, softball.
Every single one,
yeah.
I mean, I don't even get why she lives in Columbus at this point.
I don't either.
She needs to build a house right by the gym.
Literally.
Or right by where her theater is.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how much she would pay if that house? I think there is a house right by that theater.
Oh, really?
There's houses all around campus.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if there was a house for sale right around campus? How much Heather Wilson
would
pay for
Jeff
it?
I think Jeff does construction up by Columbus. I think that that's why they live up there.
That makes sense.
So
we've talked about this before. You really liked volleyball in high school. And you could have played volleyball at a college level. There's no question about that. Did that ever cross your mind that maybe I can be a dual sport athlete? Did you ever give that any serious thought?
Yeah, it did a lot. My mom's very honest. If I'm not good at something, she'll tell me. Or if I had a bad game, she'll tell me. But she would always tell me, you're as good as volleyball as you are basketball. So it was pretty big to hear that, especially from her. And I got a bunch of JUCO offers for volleyball, and I even got some for softball, but I just did not want to go the JUCO route personally for me. And yeah. Pitt State basketball.
You were a good enough athlete that was you didn't have to go that route.
I mean, I wouldn't say that people who go JUCO route aren't good enough athletes, I just think that personally for me, I wanted to go to a 4-year right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And that's just what I did. But Pitt State volleyball.
What I said is not a knock on JUCO, by
the
way.
I know. Okay.
I mean, you could argue that the Jayhawk Conference, there are Jayhawk Conference teams that can be MIAA teams.
Oh, I would agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, depending on the sport and depending on everything like that, but
yeah.
it's not that's not a solid line. There's a lot of gray area in there.
But I really did have serious thought about dual sporting at Pitt, and I talked to my coach actually about it when I committed. I was like, how likely would it be if I could play volleyball and basketball? And it was when I was recruited by Coach Lord before he left, and he was like, well, honestly, you're going to make such a big impact on this basketball program. I would personally not want you to chance playing volleyball also and get hurt, or they're so close seasons together.
Yeah.
Like, the seasons are so close that practices would overlap and all of that. So he just wanted me to be fully committed and do him for basketball. So
I'll say this. There was a girl at LeBec Community College that did it a couple years ago. His name was Danae Barnes.
Yeah, I remember her.
Yeah. Good athlete.
Yeah.
She did both. And no offense to the volleyball team, but she came in as a basketball player. She basically did volleyball on basketball schedule, if that makes sense. Like, she was a basketball player playing volleyball.
Yes, and I just think
she was very much kind of alone to the volleyball program.
And I think you can do that at JUCO, but I don't think at a Division II you can.
No,
or
that doesn't fly when you get to a four-year.
No, because you're like, my scholarship would be for basketball, but I would not want to take somebody's full ride volleyball scholarship and only decide, oh, hey, I'm going to come in this day and play. Oh, no, I'm not going to come in and play this day. Like, I don't think that's fair. So I just decided to choose one sport. And it was tough, but I'll go play like some fun intramural games or something, or play with my friends. We'll play volleyball or whatnot. But other than that, I do miss it a lot.
Yeah. You know, that was a conversation you had with Coach Lord. You have a new coach now, or obviously a new coach took over before you ever got there. You have all these years of eligibility left now because of COVID. Fifth year making a volleyball year, or do you stick with basketball?
I've thought about that too.
You thought about that.
But volleyball is a sport that I'd be out for 4 years. Like, I wouldn't have played volleyball for 4 years, and I've never played at the collegiate level, and it's just totally different. So I feel like jumping from, they'd be like, you want to play after you haven't played for 4 years? Like, I don't think they'd tell me no, but
no.
I would.
You probably wouldn't crack the lineup, though.
Nah, I probably wouldn't.
You could. I always thought you could. You always showcased your vertical in volleyball better than you did in basketball.
Yeah.
I always thought that.
Yeah. I mean, I was tired in basketball. I didn't have reason to show my vertical in basketball.
Whenever somebody asks me, how's Tristan Gay going to make the transition from high school to college? And I go, well, I don't know how it's going to go. All I know is it's not going to be five people guarding her anymore. It's not going to be.
People face guard me in college and box and one in college. Like, why? We're in college. Everyone can play. Stop it.
What coward runs a box and one in college?
I'm like, stop it. People did that a lot last year where they would just face guard me and then.
What coward runs a box and one in college?
I don't know.
Have you ever heard my extremist opinion on zone?
Uh-uh.
So this was something that Bruce Weber at K-State said in the practice one time. He goes, he was going on a long thing about our man-to-man principles and concepts and, you know, basically a speech on be tougher, you cowards, so, learn how to defend. And he goes, we are never going to soften up and put you in a 2-3 because zone is for cowards.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I just love that. And I embrace that to this day. And I think you see that in, I think there's a general philosophy of the best teams at the highest level, the best teams who make it the furthest generally will play you the whole game of man. Yeah.
My philosophy on that is there's some teams in the MIAA that literally have no shooters whatsoever. They're just really good athletes that drive, and they're bigger than us.
Zone's good for that.
So that's why we run zone. But if we run zone just because, like, they have shooters and we just can't guard somebody, we don't usually do that. We just buckle down, find someone who can guard, and then that's what we do. But
and even the best zones are run through man concepts.
Yes, like Independence in high school – they would run, I got box and one every single game. They ran a box and one and a diamond zone.
Yeah.
So I couldn't drive, or I'd drive into somebody. That was the hardest thing I've ever had to do, was play against that box and one in the diamond zone, just because I couldn't go anywhere.
I'll tell you what the biggest coward move was, and, her grandma's going to get upset at me again.
I know what you're talking about. I still give Sydney crap to this day about holding the ball out there for 6 minutes straight. Of just throwing the ball back and forth.
Oh, I was going to say, it's even worse than that same game of Ashley Ray. When Ashley Ray's defensive assignment for Gerard was, go stand in the halo.
In the paint. And don't move.
Make yourself big.
Yeah.
Like, wow. I can go D1. Wow. Good for you.
Yeah.
I still, you should give Sydney. And I don't think Sydney Crane's a big fan of mine. And so I have no disrespect towards her. But I don't think she's a big fan of mine because she was written in the paper about how you took a 3 right in her face one time.
Yeah.
And but you should give her crap.
I do. We talked about it. She's like, well, we still won, didn't we? I'm like,
because you, that's so
stalled for 6 minutes straight.
Up but, 4. That's how scared they were at that point.
Yeah, and they were up 4, weren't they?
Up 4 in the 4th.
That's what I thought.
And Ashley Ray had 4 fouls.
Yes.
That's why they were stalling, because they wanted to get her back on the floor.
I know, and nobody was tall. We were short. I was the jump ball person, so literally...
I remember you were the jump ball person.
For 2 years. Like, I mean, I won some of them, but.
What, didn't you play with Justice for a year?
2 years. Yeah, she's only a year.
How did Justice not get it?
She did my senior year. She jump ball. But my junior year, it was back and forth between me and her, I think.
Man, quite the offense of go win the jump ball, Tristan, and then immediately go run back and get the
go
ball.
Score. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
You know. A lot of players that you played with over your 4 years, but let's focus on your last two because mainly because Erica wasn't there. Erica was, I think, a very complimented guard to you. She
definitely.
Was. Erica held a lot of different shooting records before you got there. I think you took maybe 3 or 4 of her records that she had on her, on that little wall there.
Yeah.
And now nobody remembers her anymore.
Whatever.
All about
no, she's awesome.
But she was a very capable. She was. A better passer than she was a scorer, and she was a very good scorer.
Definitely. She got me the ball a lot.
My favorite quote from Snyder about Erica was, every single person learns to keep their head on a swivel, because if they don't, Erica's going to hit
take
them
off.
Erica's going to take her head off with a pass.
I mean, I still remember when I would ask her what she did when she got to the gym, she said that she would set up trash cans and then just practice passing, running down the floor and hitting the trash cans with the ball.
She never told me that. That's a,
yeah.
That is commitment right there.
I know.
Because, like, again, no offense to what you do, it's a lot more fun to shoot threes from the spike line than it is to run down the floor and throw a ball on a trash can.
No, I totally agree. Like, a bunch of people were, what are you going to do without Erica? And I'm like, we're going to figure it out. Like, honestly, and we figured it out. I mean, I just had to take a whole new role. And
here's a story I'll let you berate me for is I remember that. I remember the preview I wrote for Labette County girls basketball your junior year. And obviously the transition with Allie Arco was a fair point to address and address the dynamic of it. But I think something I kind of honed in on a little bit was, can Tristan defend the other team's best player?
Right.
Because that is what Erica did for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
was defend the other team's best player. And I think you're old enough now to understand that as a young player, a freshman and a sophomore, that opened up opportunities for you offensively.
Oh, yeah.
And so I wondered, what is Labette County going to look like without Erica? Can Tristan do it on her own, and can she defend? And I don't think you were happy with that story, because you played Frontenac the first game of the season, and you had 30 in the first half. And I think Frontenac had like 17.
Yeah.
I was like, well...
Yeah,
I do remember
that. I mean, that's what I'm talking about by people who not talk against me, because it's not like you were talking against me, but no. It does fuel me. Like, I'm just like, all right, I'm going to show you what I can do.
I was always going to be more, not necessarily more critical, but I was always going to hold you to a higher standard than basically the only athlete I held to the same standard, I think, that I held you to. And just in terms of my coverage and my interactions with them and the questions I would ask coaches about, you know, I'm not going to ask, why didn't Caitlin Helwig, I love Caitlin Helwig, by
I
the
do
way.
Too.
But I'm not going to ask, why didn't Caitlin Helwig go out and give you 25?
Right.
You know, she wasn't someone who was, if she scored 20, which I think she did once or twice, she got high teens maybe once or twice. She was a very good defender and she was a very good distributor of the ball. But if if Caitlin Helwig got you 17,
that's what it was supposed to do. Yeah,
that was a career game, and you know, for her scoring wise, whereas 17 for you. If you didn't score 20, that was
people
you know,
thought, "What's wrong with you?"
Exactly,
like, it's kind of crazy.
And I knew that's a standard you held to yourself. So I was gonna live up to the own line you were gonna hold yourself to. Probably the only high school girls athlete I ever held to the same standard was Nina Taylor. I'm trying to think of boys out. Easton Dean is junior and senior year. I kind of held him pretty high.
I'd say Magic. Magic scored a ton.
He did.
He held.
And when I say held to the standard, it's how I kind of treated them. It's right. You know, I'm not going to, you know, that doesn't mean I'm, you know, everybody thinks I should cover everybody equally.
It's kind of hard to do that, though.
Equal to me, I always prefer the term equitable over equal.
Yeah, that's a good word to use.
Because, you know, you're right. And that goes back to the example. I'm not going to write an article about why didn't, you know, in a game recap, oh, they held Caitlin Hellwig to 4 points.
Yeah.
But if Tristan Gegg only scored 15, and it, you know, where she's averaging around 20, and particularly in the loss, it's okay, what did they do to take Tristan away, and how does that change it? And I knew you could handle all that. You were not a, you know, it's always funny to me that some of the most successful, the top tier athletes, basically every year, and that I cover, I think a good way to know what I'm talking about is the people that are nominated for Athlete of the Year at my paper every year. I almost never have problem. I don't think I've had a problem with any single one of their parents ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's or no, they're like, none of them have ever gone on Facebook and said, fire Sean Fry. You have, but no, I'm just kidding.
No, I have not. I've never said that.
But, I mean, it's a, I think that it, that shows a type of atmosphere that you come from. Not just open to criticism, but open to being held to that high standard.
Right.
And I think that's what's carried you on to Pitt now.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying is whenever our first game this season, when I didn't play well, I held myself to that standard where I was disappointed in myself. And I just let them down. And I think that does carry on from Labette being coached very well and being held to that standard by you guys, by my parents, just all around. So, but I don't... Sometimes I take it too hard. Like, I get too mad at myself. Like, if I don't. If I'm just too competitive sometimes.
Okay, so you are. You're still a young woman. You are. And you're still playing. What? I've had people, kids come up to me, and I talk with kids every now and then, and I know the high school girl that gets super upset with herself after games. And especially if they feel like they didn't play well. And I always try to be that, you know, in that role, I'm always trying to be, if they're coming to me just personally, I'm going to be like, I'm going to be the more positive person because they're probably getting it from their coach a little bit, which justifiably so. What is the message to a girl or any athlete who's beating themselves down a little bit because they feel like they're not playing well? You still do that a little bit, but what is... You know, if you took yourself out, what's the objective message and advice you have to that person who's being a little hard on themselves?
Honestly, in my position, I've always had to be a leader for whoever I'm playing with and for. And a leader isn't someone that it sucks, I know, but you can't show that you're pissed off or you can't show that you're mad at yourself because then who are they going to look up to? Like, they can't. Then it feels like they can do that now. And as a team, you can't have that while you're playing at least. Like, take that home, be upset, take a night to be upset about it, and then you have to move on. You can't dwell on it and all of that because then you can't ever pick yourself back up. So it's just kind of a thing where you got to let other people pick you up. I've always struggled with that. It's like, I can do it on my own.
I like that advice of almost like compartmentalize what you're feeling, you know?
Yeah.
I've always advocated for feel how you feel, especially if you're at home basically by yourself or just with your unit of people that you live with, you know, you shouldn't be judged for being angry or something.
Right.
Let it fester for a night. Let it eat at you for a night. Go to bed and then wake up and you better that.
And honestly, be ready to go back to work the next day. You have to.
I like the advice of not letting that show to your team though, because that's where cancer starts.
And I'm still working on that personally. Like, it's gotten a lot better since when I first started. Like, I would just get so mad at myself, and my coach would be like, "We can't have you out there being Debbie Downer on yourself, because then you're not giving energy to your teammates, and then that doesn't. You're like an energy sucker," is what we always say. You're an energy sucker instead of an energy giver. Like, if someone gives you energy, you give that energy to somebody else instead of just sucking it all in and not passing it on. So I think that that's really important to take away, too.
I like that. Energy sucker. You know, and I mean that, too. I'm not trying to make a joke about it. I like that. Some of the best, I think, you know, anecdotes of advice you can get now aren't necessarily the most deepest or profound things. Sometimes a little bit of silliness can go a little bit of a way. Energy sucker. the example of that at K-State was senior year. My senior year, Bruce Weber brought in, he always brought in like a motivational speaker towards the towards the beginning of the regular season to talk to the team. And the person that came in my senior year, he talked about quote unquote hype levels.
Yeah.
And he said, put yourself on a scale between 1 to 10, where you feel like you're at your peak performance in terms where you're at hype wise when you're at your peak of performance.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody put different numbers. I mean, and you know, we literally had my roommate at the time, my senior year roommate, his name was Will Spradling. He literally put a 2. He was a very quiet guy, lead by example. He played hard. I promise you, the guy led the nation in charges taken every year.
Oh, wow.
He took 3 charges in at half court 1 year.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, just walking the guy, you know, walking the defender up, walking the ball up the floor, takes a charge at, like, half court. That's tough to do.
Yeah.
So, but everybody put different numbers down. I think it ranged from my roommate putting a 2 to... We had a guy named Javon Thomas put a 9.5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can't put 10. So he's going to put 9.5.
Yeah.
And the speaker there said, whatever number you put down is fine. Don't go below or above that no matter what's going on.
Oh,
if you're a 2, don't be a 1 and don't be a 3. If you're a 9, don't be a 10 and don't be an 8. Be where you're at. And learn how to maintain that. And I love that.
Yeah, that's really good.
Because that you talk about energy sucker and energy giver. That's keeping that kind of same flow of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wants to talk about consistency and everything. I think that was a non-cliche way to make a cliche point.
Yeah.
And things become cliche because their value is worth endless repetition.
Right.
But I loved that example.
That is really cool. I've never even heard about that or thought about it in that way. But it's kind of true because then if you go above your number... It's not
you're
that
you're out of control.
Faking. It's not, or it's not that you're faking it either. It's just
That's
a good way to put it. Is you're out of control, or go below it, you're letting yourself down, kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly.
So,
what would you say your hype level is, 1 to 10?
When I'm at my peak.
When you're at peak performance, where do you want to be at?
Probably, like? I'd be at an 8. I would say an 8, and definitely in college for sure. Like I told you in high school,
I haven't gone to one of your games, and I need to do that. And at
Pitt
State.
Yeah, fake. You haven't gone to see me play once.
don't put me in that. Don't put me in that Pittsburgh crowd.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I would have put you at maybe like a 6.5 or a 7 at Labette County High School.
Right. This is me in college now.
She showed me a photo of herself, by the way.
That's not even me scoring. That's like my other teammate got in charge.
I love photos of like these. Yeah. I always try to get celebration photos. I focused on that more as a photographer. I love this. This is my favorite photo of you, by the way. I love this.
I thought it was cool.
And like I say, it's not that you didn't play with energy. I think you were always, you were a high school girl. Everybody's coming into themselves, you know, just as a person outside of an athlete. So, but being athlete is part of that equation as well. I would have loved to see you play with the kind of swagger and energy that, I'll tell you who was a 9 was Derek Williams.
Oh, for sure.
At Parsons.
But that's a boy. Girls get criticized if we're like that.
Which is crap to me. And you know I think that's crap.
I know. So I've already told you my story of why I was never really super hype about always just saying I was selfish and a ball hog and conceited. So that's why I just kind of was chill when I was in high school.
Which to me, I agree with you that you are accurate. I think it's crap that that's what happened.
Yeah.
And I think it's crap that that's what the reality is. I think we've seen different iterations of that reality unfold at the school recently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I've never understood people who hold people back.
No, me neither.
Particularly, were you a straight A student in high school?
Yeah, I'm a 3.9 student now in college.
I mean, what the hell do they want?
I know. What else?
Like, what more do they want from that from a person?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got.
Are you good over there?
I'm good. The phone just got knocked off the receiver. I got a little too comfortable in here. Well, every time I'm around you, something happens.
I know. It's
something
funny.
Bad happens.
Whatever. No, it doesn't.
That's what you say, but. when I'm trying to think of good Tristan Gegg. Oh, here's another good Tristan Gegg story that I'll go over with Tristan Gegg is I walk in the practice one day at LeBec County High School. I think it was your senior year. And you were in practice. I mean, you guys were just going over. I think you guys were literally going over. No, you guys were going against at K-State, we would have called it their defense, which means you were running offense against a scout defense.
Yes.
And you guys were running your set, and you shot it from the spike line and hit it. And I'm standing next to Heather Wilson, and you hit the shot, and, like, nobody really reacted. Like, you just hit it. All right, next set. But I sat there, and I was like, that's just bad defense if you're out there guarding that, if you're that far extended. Yeah. Like, what do you do?
Right.
Okay, story time. And I don't know the answer to this, so I'm not, you know, this was not some preconceived notion of a conversation to the listeners. High school or college or AAU, any level of basketball, what is the dirtiest thing that has happened to you in terms of someone guarding you? What is the dirtiest thing that someone did to try and stop you? Because you were obviously a very, and I imagine this answer would more likely come in at the high school or AAU level because you were a more dominant player in that.
Definitely, I would definitely say my senior year at Fort Scott. Fort Scott was always really rough.
At Fort Scott.
And Snyder's very chill. Like, she'll yell and then sit down or stand and just walk around and yell.
She was on the refs earlier this year, by the way.
I have never seen her come unglued like this. We were playing at Fort Scott, and they're running a box and one or a triangle.
Who was the Skylar? What was her last name?
Skylar Brown.
Skylar Brown. She was a good player, by the way.
Yeah, but she's not the one that – Jenny Denton was the one who guarded me. She was very physical. That game, I was running the baseline to get open or whatever because they were in zone as well in a box and one.
It's basically all you faced.
Yeah. So she was guarding me on the baseline, and their other post player had tripped me while I was running the baseline, and Jenny pushed me at the same time. So I was
push you where? Like from the back?
Yeah. So I was running, and she was kind of behind me trying to catch up, and my jersey was completely untucked because she was pulling it. And when I got tripped, she literally just shoved me. Jenny and I are good friends now, so it's cool. But
it's cool now, but
we were friends in high school.
But all the Pittsburgh people are fake, right?
They were. But we were friends is the difference. So we were friends in high school, and so she just shoved me really. I had pinch marks from Fort Scott people. Like, it was just Snyder came unglued. She's like, do you not see her on the ground right now? And I couldn't even get up. Like, that's, like, they called it, I think they almost teed Snyder up, I'm pretty sure. But it was, I've never seen her come unglued like that.
I haven't seen Snyder. I don't know whether she has or not in the six, seven years that I've been here, got a tech, because I haven't been in every game.
Yeah.
And you can also get texts for the refs being oversensitive. Right. So, but she was on the refs in the game against Circle this year.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh. I think that's up there with the most I've seen her get animated, almost specifically at officials. And I was dying laughing on the baseline one time because she called a timeout, and Heather basically had to talk to the players during the whole full minute-long timeout because Snyder called the timeout, and all the players run back, and she high-fives everybody, and they all huddle up, and they sit on the bench. Snyder just wags her finger at the ref over and over and over and over until they came over and talked to her. And then she talked to the ref for the whole time until, like, the last 10 seconds.
That's funny.
I'll tell you who impressed me was the little point guard out of Circle.
Oh, really?
Kimberly Cook.
I don't know who that is.
State 100-meter dash champion.
Wow.
She was fast.
Wow.
She was fast with the ball. That was an interesting game I watched, by the way.
Didn't we win? Didn't
yes,
we end up
winning? LeBec County won by 2.
That's what I thought.
And the game they led by 24 at half.
Oh, my goodness.
And I knew Circle was good. All I know is, though, I was taking photos for that game for my job.
Mm-hmm.
I took photos for the Butler County Times-Gazette. Because they cover Circle, and I know their sports editor really well there. So anytime one of my teams goes to his area, he sends me photos and a story.
Cool.
And anytime one of his teams comes to my area, I send him photos and a story. And which really helps when that Circle tournament's going on, because I have Parsons in LeBec County there. I really send him one or two photos a year, and I milk him for a week for that.
Oh, my gosh.
but anyway, when I texted him the box score and he was following the game, he didn't really follow the game as a whole. He just saw the final score. And he was like, I can't believe Circle lost. So apparently that was a really good team that somehow Lovett County got way up on. And I saw how that game was unfolding, and I was like, I bet you Circle's going to make it like 12 or 10, but it's just, they're just going to, like, there's just not enough time.
Yeah. Oh, close.
That was, you almost, they got a decent look at a three for the win.
Ooh.
They went for the three, too. Like, that was, I remember I was,
Wow.
So I was on the Circle sideline for the last sequence of the game, and they came out of a timeout. And one thing I'll do is I will generally, if a team calls a timeout near the end of the game, usually I don't normally take photos if the game's that close because I want to film it on my phone and then post. Because if the game's within one possession in the last 20 seconds, I'm not taking photos. I'm taking video because I want to catch a buzzer beater.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't film the timeouts, but usually I'm not on the baseline taking photos. So I was actually on behind the Circle bench, and I listened to their coach. They wanted a three for the win.
Wow.
Gutsy call.
Yeah.
Especially, but I'll tell you what, their little point guard was smooth and quick at the ball. Hard to guard a 100-meter dash champion.
Yeah,
That's a quick guard. Dirtiest thing that happened to you is that Fort Scott girl, and you guys are friends now?
I mean, we were friends during it, like, but just not, I wasn't friends with anybody when we played, but after the game.
And I get that. That'd be hard for me to put behind, though, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, I've never seen my aunt or my coach come unglued like that before.
To a certain degree, I think it's funny you know that you mentioned the jerseys untucked from behind because they've been pulled
that
the whole time.
That happens in college, too. But I
would just tell the ref, like, look at my
tell her to get the hell off me. Like, I literally tell the girl and during the game to get the hell off me in a college game. So
I love shooting the breeze with refs at K-State because I always work the baseline. Upper-level managers, they obviously had the opportunity to work the bench, and I did that on the road.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to be a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always wanted to be a sports writer. And so I never felt compelled to work the bench because you had to do more work on the bench. And so at home games, I always just sat on the baseline just so I could just sit there and monitor the Cowboys and give refs water. And the interaction with the refs was probably what I remember most about game days in addition to the actual games.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember once we were actually playing a game in Kansas City, and we were playing Florida, and my roommate at the time, his name was Rodney Magruder. He plays for the Pistons now.
Oh, wow.
And we were running various sets where basically every time down the floor, he would go to the right corner and then baseline cut to the other side of the floor.
Yeah.
Or the reverse of it, left corner, baseline to the other side of the floor. And every time he was doing that, he was getting body checked.
That's what
by the big.
Me. Yeah.
And so during immediate timeout, I told the ref, like, hey, watch Florida number 12 or whatever. I can't remember the number.
Yeah.
Watch number 12. Watch the center body check 22 for Black as he baseline drives. You mm-hmm. gotta catch that. 30 seconds out of that timeout, it happened, and he got a foul call.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
So I maintain Sean Fry got a foul call for his roommate.
That's funny.
The other funny interaction I had with a ref one time was so we had water bottles for each of the refs, three refs at a game. So mm-hmm. we labeled the bottles A, B, and C, and we had three bottles on each end of the floor.
Okay.
And the manager was responsible for keeping track of which one is which.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you the system we used. A was for who we thought the biggest asshole was.
Oh, my gosh.
B was for whoever the minority was, generally,
okay.
the black yeah. guy. And then C was for the other one.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I hate when I have to say I'm not racist, but obviously, you know, when you're just trying to keep track of something
sure.
B for the black guy is an easy thing to remember.
Yeah.
My senior night game against Baylor at home. So the last home game I'm ever working. Second media timeout of the first half. Ref comes over. It's the one black ref we have. So I go grab water bottle B and give it to him. And he looks at the bottle and he goes, I'm B on the other end, too. Is it because I'm black?
Oh, my gosh.
That was... And I looked at him dead in the eye, and I go, yep. And he was like, I like it.
That's funny.
And you never want to... If you're, that, I guarantee you that's a tradition that carries on at K-State, though, is A goes to the asshole. So any Big 12 refs out there, if you happen to listen to The War Room, an SEK sports radio show...
You get A.
You get A. You don't want to. You want C or B.
Yeah.
That's what you want. That's where you want to live. We'll wrap it up here. What's the going for? How many? So you're on a bit of a Christmas break. I know you're going to be back by the time probably the show airs. What's what are you kind of expecting out of yourself and your team this year? What's Pitt State women's basketball going to look like?
Yeah, we started off a little rough, but we're 4-3 now, so we have our winning record. Mm-hmm. And we come back, we start practice 28th, and we have an exhibition game against Tabor the 30th. And then we'll
Why is that an exhibition game?
Because they're an NAIA school.
Okay. So I didn't know Tabor was NAIA. I thought they were. I thought they were D2.
So then we play a makeup game against Northwest because they had COVID, so
I remember that.
We couldn't play the first game with them, and that'll be in my NCAA play. But honestly, I think that we got some really tough teams out of the way at the beginning. And I think other people still have to play those tough teams. So I think that we just got to keep trugging along and wanting to be there and still having fun while we're playing.
Is there still going to be a D2 tournament?
They're supposed to be. Okay. Yeah, but unless COVID, I guess, spikes again or something, they'll cancel it. But we don't know. There's a lot of unknowns for the season. We're just kind of going day by day.
On a personal note, I'll tell you what one of the I don't want to say cried. I don't think there's a shame in crying, but I want to be accurate. Tears welled up when I got into my car after I shot a photo of the first people at Labette Health getting the vaccine.
Yeah.
Like, light at the end of the tunnel. And I'll tell you what, it's been a rough one.
Mm-hmm.
And
like, thank goodness 2020 is almost over, is what I have to say.
And I get that. And I get that we're nearing the end of a lot of what this calendar year, a lot of the universal adversities that a lot of us had faced. I hate the cliche of, 2020 or whatever.
Yeah, no,
because, everybody's year is different. And, you know, for me, there's a lot of good that happened to me this year.
Yeah.
I took, as hard as it was not to cover spring sports, I took a lot of value in the time of working from home where, you know, I got like 6 months of not covering sports, which sucked, but that's 6 months of not covering sports after 6 years of nonstop.
Right, right.
So it was rest needed. Then I had to cover, you know, stuff on the news desk. You know, I literally was researching a story on a rock shortage in town.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, that's when you know, like, I've gone off the deep end. But it's one of those things where it's like, that made me a better journalist, being able to cover city commission stuff and being able to...
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I see things in a different way now. And, you know, with my $1,200 of Trump bucks, I got myself a grill and, you know, caught up on some bills and financially and self-sustainably. And I even lost a little bit of weight during COVID and all that. You know, there's a lot of good for me that happened this year, and there's a lot of bad that happened independent of COVID that was going to happen one way or the other.
Yeah.
So I think my lesson that I learned, and if I were to preach anything, is life truly is what you make it, because you never know what's going to be taken from you without your control.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to maintain a certain sense of, I hate the word pride, you have to maintain a certain sense of confidence and belief in yourself
and whatever you do
and whatever you're doing, and you have to be willing to accept whatever happens as it's happening, because you never know, that might just be it.
Right. No, I totally agree with that.
I mean, it's really, and you know, it was the cliche of coaches, oh, this could be your last game. Imagine how quick some of that's been taken from people.
I know.
I mean, oh yeah. You guys finished your year, right?
Yes, we didn't make the national tournament, so we were already done like a week before they canceled.
Trista finds a way to make me look like the bad guy, talking, making me like, oh, so you didn't make nationals last year, that's why your season ended, right? That's right. What's your message to, last question. Okay, I know we've been wrapping up for about 10 minutes now. I've got one more question for you, then we'll actually wrap up. You played against Nina Taylor. She's at D1 now at Oral Roberts. She's still dealing with an injury. What was... I think, in my opinion, especially in the SEK League, but I would argue at any level, you and Nina were the two best women's players that I covered in Southeast Kansas for basketball, probably in this area in a while. I think the only one that could probably compare is Cindy Crane and Ashley Ray at Girard. Mm-hmm. What What was it like facing against Nina? What does she provide as a matchup that makes her so difficult? Because I don't think she's as fast as you. She's not as fast as she's not as an elite shooter, but you could argue, I would argue she's probably, obviously she's a little taller, but a bit better rebounder and stuff like that. What makes her such a difficult matchup from a basketball standpoint? From your perspective?
I would say, well, every game I knew I was going to be guarding her. So it was just kind of one of those things that I was excited every time we played them. Mm-hmm. But I also, like, she's also obviously a great athlete, great person. Like, I have so much respect for Nina, and her parents or her dad's always been great to me. And so their family's awesome. But every year we would play them, like, when I would go match up against her, I was ready to take, like, the challenge, I guess you mm-hmm. could say. But I had a lot of people on my team that I knew were better than what she had on her team. So it wasn't.
You had a way better supporting cast than
right,
she did.
Right.
And no offense to the Parsons girls that play with her. I actually think Nina's supporting cast, really her junior and senior year, did fairly well, especially defensively. They made things tough.
Yeah.
But you're right. The, you know, if you took Tristan Gegg off Labette County and Nina Taylor off Parsons, I don't think anybody's going to question who would have won that game by 30
right,
every time.
Right. And it was just, it's not that she, like I said, it was a good matchup, but I just mm-hmm. think she got really frustrated throughout the game. So
yes.
she didn't give up, but she didn't play as hard as she probably could have all throughout the whole game. So then at that point, it was just kind of taking over.
And I think it's part of the way that Snyder coaches and your in that system over there was not designed to make Nina frustrated, but it's a thing that makes, it's what gets Nina frustrated. It's,
yeah.
You guys defend the ball so hard. You guys switch everything. You help a lot. You double stuff down. You try to put people in situations they don't want to be in,
yeah.
and then you push the tempo.
Right.
And so that's going to wear Nina down, and it's going to frustrate. That's going to wear down and frustrate the best of players.
Yeah.
And honestly, Nina was the best of players at
yeah.
the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, the cold hard truth is the reason she was able to finally beat Labette County once is probably because you left. And I mean, no offense to that team. That team did a lot of great things that year. I want to say they won like one less game than you did your senior year. They accomplished a lot.
Right, right.
But I mean, Nina played the game of her life that senior year. They beat mm-hmm. Labette County. Last question before you go. We had talked about what Pitt State's going to look like. What is, when you look back on this year as a whole, everything you've experienced, everything that you're looking forward to, biggest lesson you learned as, what's the biggest change that Tristan Gegg experienced?
I mean, obviously, it's kind of like you said, cliche, but it's okay to be. Definitely don't take anything for granted, because mm-hmm. I know a ton of people last season that weren't on our team that in my AA, like two All-Americans from Central Missouri, they got their season ripped away, and they could have won another national championship, but they didn't get a chance mm-hmm. to play. So it's kind of like you got to give everything you have every single time you're out there, and that's what I do. So mm-hmm. I think that's the message you have to take, high school, college, middle school, whatever level you're at, honestly. Just play the game that you love and go hard.
There we go. That'll do it for the War Room. One of the longer sit-downs I've had with somebody in a while. It's always good to catch up with you, Tristan. And on a day's notice, you come in here and give me more than an hour of your time. I'm very you have no idea how genuinely appreciative I am of that.
Oh,
so
no problem.
So thank you very much. Big plans for the new year? There's a right answer to this.
We practice the day before and the day after, so absolutely nothing.
That's a good one. Keep saying, I know. So both you and I have had COVID.
Yep.
We'll keep following our guidelines, though, not just because it's the right thing to do, but it's the right example to set.
Definitely.
Keep playing hard. Keep doing you. Who knows? Maybe I'll even see you on a volleyball court someday.
Oh, man.
I'll probably see you on a basketball court, though. I'm going to come to your game. I'm going to come. If you told me, Sean, this is the game you need to come to, what would be that game this year? What's the biggest game of the year?
Oh, goodness. There's a lot of good teams this year, so.
Mm-hmm.
A good, I want to say Emporia. That would be a really, really tough game to play mm-hmm. against. But them or
home game.
Oh, I don't even know our home schedule, to be honest. But North.
Do you play every conference team? Do you play every conference team home at home?
Fort Hayes. We're playing Fort Hayes and Nebraska Kearney at home this year, and those would be very, very good games. And it'll be a Thursday and a Saturday, so they're in the same week.
There we go.
So, yeah.
All right. That'll do it. Thank you, Tristan Gegg, for coming on the War Room again. Second time here. God forbid there's a third.
Whatever.
Thanks for coming, Tristan. I appreciate
it.
God bless and keep wearing your masks.